Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Back with another episode of Gentleman's World. As we gear up to do our next recording for our next guest who's scheduled on the books for tomorrow, and I'm very excited for that to go through, and then that one will air on Monday's episode. That's still the plan. I haven't heard otherwise so far. But I want to take a moment now to chat with you and give you my voice and my opinion. And there have been some recent things I've purposely not talked about or covered, mostly because there wasn't enough context and I wanted to do some more deep dive on what was really happening. Let's start off first with the Whoopi Goldberg situation happened a couple weeks ago. And if you weren't following it, and first of all, I celebrate you for not following it heavily. But just to summarize what happened with this, Whoopi Goldberg has been a host on The View for a very long time. I think she's one of the last few remaining from the original intent of the show. There's been host rotation like crazy. And they were discussing the Holocaust. And there was a comment made from Whoopi that made it sound as though she didn't understand that the Holocaust did have racial implications. And at the time, I didn't follow it too closely because I figured out it'll blow over. She got suspended for 2 weeks. She was threatening to quit. It became a larger issue than I thought it should have been. Not because I agreed with what she said. It's not that. But when she explained, when I listened to what she said, specifically what she said, I realize she's, because she's older than I am by far, I realize she just doesn't really understand how to express what she meant. And what I was told, and I forget who said it, I believe it was, it's one of the gals from Fox News, said that she used to be a host on The View, and I seem to remember those episodes. And she said that it's basically unscripted. You don't know what you're going to be asked, and your answer is kind of in the spotlight, and it's kind of a natural flow, similar to the Gentleman's World podcast, and part of the inspiration for why I have the format the way I do, that I don't script either. At the same time, there has to be at least some thought put into the answer and how it might be received, and also the ability to quantify your answer so that it's not misinterpreted. I believe what happened there with Whoopi, and I'm not going to play the audio because it is, for some people, offensive, but she implied that the Holocaust wasn't about race. That was, I'm paraphrasing, but that's what she's implying. And of course, this got a lot of people upset because the Holocaust did have racial implications in how it was perceived on both sides. What she was trying to say, and she did a poor job explaining it because she was so fixated on her defense that she didn't fixate enough on the words. And it's a different time. This is not like others where people get kind of set off by random words, you know, like LGBTQ and their terms and things. It's not that. This is different because the word race or racial or racial bias or racism have become triggers for toxicity. We have different interpretations of what that means. Here's what I'm saying. In Whoopi Goldberg's brain at the time, she had always associated, and she said this later on her apology, she had always associated race to what you see, because that's the first instinct, because historically, that's always been the first reaction, right? Is it's about your skin. We have treated Asian Americans, as an example, somewhat equivalent to Caucasian, but that's not fair because they are different races. Then you talk about mixed race, whether whatever the mixture of the race is, and how do you classify race? It generally is based on the way you look. This has historically been kind of an accepted norm. So she's reacting to the accepted norm, not the actual core definition of set, because the core definition of race has nothing to do with what you look like. If you look at the, if you follow boxing, and many of you probably don't, but if you follow boxing today, the most popular boxer today is Canelo Alvarez, arguably. If you looked at that guy and he didn't talk to you and you didn't know anything else other than his last name, you might assume that he is Caucasian because he is fair-skinned, he's red hair, he doesn't look like a traditional Mexican-American, but it is what it is. So if you didn't know anything other than his last name or the way he speaks or where he lives, you would assume he's Caucasian just by the way he looks, and you might misclassify him in terms of what he's had to go through to get to where he is. He has supported Mexico and the Mexican culture and heritage for years, and he supports it. So nobody would ever that knows Canelo Alvarez would ever even try to say that he has been privileged because of his skin. He's been privileged because he went out there and did. His skin had nothing to do with it. The fact is he came from Mexico. He is Mexican. He speaks Spanish, his last name. He's proud of his heritage, et cetera, and so on. That's, I think, where Whoopi went wrong, was associating race to what you see. Because as we know, as what you see doesn't necessarily tell the whole truth, right? So this causes a furor because, and I don't mean that as a pun, but this causes a furor in multiple circles, not even just Jews, but multiple circles, because it's a tone-deaf statement that she made. My takeaway was she didn't think through what she was going to say before she said it and phrase it in a form that said something along the lines of, from my perspective, if you have this scenario, which in this case is skin, that's how I attribute a racial situation. I don't consider that one, and I won't repeat it because I don't want to upset people, but I'm saying that she should refer to it as, this is what I believe. And then if somebody has something that contradicts that, I want to hear it, right? So that you can learn. But she was adamant in her stance because she's reacting, and many do this. She's reacting to the idea that in her case, women, you know, people of color, African-Americans predominantly, have had these where it truly is a situation that you can call a racial, quote, war. But that has nothing to do with race on a broad scale. That is one type of racial, you know, disagreement that turns into something violent. But there are many of them. There's many of them. We can go back to regular Americans that hit the shores and Native Americans and the Trail of Tears. And we can go to Asian Americans and how they were treated when they hit the Western shores, and on and on and on. Like, there's multiple examples where race did play a factor, including the Holocaust. In the heat of the moment, under the lens of this show, she made a statement that was poorly thought out because she didn't think through all the different situations where race plays. Nobody would disagree, I think, that African Americans had a situation in the past. However, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's all about your skin. Sometimes it's simply around ignorance and the way things happen. And sometimes it's around this dominant, I'm the dominant, you know, race. And you have to be careful when you state that this other thing wasn't a racial situation because of your skin tone. Because now it's not that you're just insulting Jews, you're insulting Asians, you're insulting Native Americans, you're insulting women, technically. Like, every situation where there's some sort of a disparity between groups, you're insulting all of them. And I think she did not think it through before throwing out that answer. If you haven't heard about this, it was a big story, and they've tried to kind of dust it under the rug and make it pass, but it's still kind of a story. I would argue that it's taken more of a forefront than the Dave Chappelle show, which I argue the Dave Chappelle show was overblown for a similar reason. So that was out there. I stopped following it because I realized, you know, at the end of the day, I see what she was trying to do, and I understand, because she's older, you know, culture played a part in this one. It was her being kind of culturally insensitive and not thinking about the words she was saying in her messaging and not stating it in the term of, this is what I believe or believed, and I'm willing to listen if you have a contradictory statement and I'll learn from it. I don't think that came across, and it became a larger issue. And then the comment was made that, you know, if this was anybody else on the, quote, right, they would have tried to cancel that person and ban them instead of a 2-week something. So there's also that bias as well. And then what's happening with Joe Biden and Russia and Ukraine. I covered Ukraine situation on a previous episode, and that one's still hitting a fever pitch. And currently they've kind of associated what we're dealing with inflation and the supply chain. They try to associate it to what's happening in Ukraine and Russia. And of course, we know that situation started in 2020. It started before 2021, but it hit a fever pitch in 2021 when Joe Biden took office and executed executive orders. So we can directly correlate what we're experiencing now, the rise of it, the pinnacle of it, from the start back when Joe Biden took office and executed executive orders. The Russia-Ukraine situation may help worsen sentiment around these things. So it doesn't help the situation. It may exacerbate it. But I do think that I think it's hopefully transparent to people that this started a long time ago. It started before Biden, but he made it worse with the executive orders. And then the Russia-Ukraine, which he has mishandled so far, has made it even worse. So we can associate it back to the current administration. What we don't know is what's going to happen with Russia-Ukraine, what will be the continued impact on Americans and people around the nation that are NATO countries and otherwise. And then in the U.S., what's going to happen come November? Do we still get the blowout we expected? And if we do, how can they repair the damage that's been done? The other big thing that happened, and I wanted to share this one because I haven't followed it as closely as I think I should have, but the truckers in the mainland, North America, truckers have been banding together to protest the mandates around COVID-19 and the lockdowns and everything else, because I've always made the case that if you're driving a truck, you're driving a truck the vast majority of your life. And it doesn't make sense to have the mandates at all, but if you're in a truck, you are at much less risk. But many companies just jumped on the bandwagon to implement mandates regardless because they didn't want to create a separate process for different employee types. So these truck drivers basically banded together to protest it and creating blockades and everything else. And Canada Prime Minister Trudeau apparently invoked an emergency act that allowed them to freeze accounts and try to lock it down with the protests and everything. And that's getting a lot of flack around the world because it feels heavy-handed. You're basically anti-protest at that point. And this is a developed Western country where you wouldn't expect that kind of thing. But I believe, this is my opinion, I believe that, you know, Canada was really inspired by the same actions taken by the current administration of the United States, that you should just basically take an authoritarian approach anytime you don't like something, as opposed to resolving the underlying issue, which is we shouldn't have these mandates and locks in the first place. We should allow personal choice and personal freedom. And then do whatever you need to do at borders and at travel points. But just to do your job, especially when you're nowhere near an office, I think you should be allowed to do what you need to do to make a living. Because ultimately, everybody needs to take care of your family and we need to feed your families. I more respect people that they have to depend on the system because they've been locked out by this. I have respect for them. And when I was employing people, one of my goals was to make sure that I helped take care of them and help them make some money in a hard time, even though it put me out financially. I felt it was the right thing to do, as well as help people get some skills that would hopefully help them in their next career path. So I think that right now it's a tough time for everybody. I'm not going to present that everything is hunky-dory and special and great and good, because I think it's a tough time for everybody. I don't think anybody's having it easy. And it seems like people are turning to desperation, and I hope nobody listening here is that. I hope that with the guests we have and some of the messaging I share, that it kind of helps get you through the day, if nothing else. But also you can take something away to reassure you that at some point we'll get better. I personally think that there's things that need to change that we've taken a little bit too long to change. But I believe we'll come out on the back end. Whether we'll come out stronger is yet to be seen, but I do think we'll come out on the back end. And I think it's just a matter of patience and time and just working through what we're dealing with and hold the line. Because I think we'll be in a better spot. And then one point I want to talk about everybody with my situation. So I talk to a lot of different people for outside the podcast realm, just in general. And I've met a lot of interesting people and I've met some not so interesting people. And for me, I love the communication. I love the spirit of talking to people, and that's a lost art. People don't really want to talk anymore. Everything's about text messages, which I don't do text messages. Even my own, you know, mother, she's doing text messages. I don't do it. So as I'm introduced to different companies and different managers and different people, and we get on the phone or we get on video and we have the conversations, I can arguably say the vast majority of them will walk away from that call amazed and impressed at how I express and how I communicate more than anybody else they talk to, not because of anything I'm doing different than anybody else could. It's just I prefer that style. I prefer talking. I like communicating. I think that it's a lost art form that we should ideally get back to, but technology has desired us to steer away from it to social media where we're just typing out 280 characters or to text messages or to some other form that is not using voice on voice, which allows many people to hide from their emotional expression. They're not able to express themselves in voice form, so they use the typing because they're not able to express themselves. I would challenge you to think about if, and I gave this challenge a call to action a while ago. If you have friends or you have people that you would consider friends that are amenable to it, to get back to the groove of actually talking on the phone or talking on video, in some way communicating that is not, that's a personal form of communication. It's not a written form of communication. If you're going to do a written form, here's a shocking thing. How about you write them a letter? And I don't mean an email. I mean, actually write them a letter and mail it. Why? Because it forces you to think about the emotion behind your message. It's less of the urgency of writing or typing a thing. You're taking the time to actually, you're forcing yourself to think about how you feel about the message, how you feel about the words, and how you feel about the other person receiving it. And you want them to respond, and you want to sense or feel their emotions in return. You might say, well, why don't I hang out with them in person? And here's the truth. There's nothing wrong with hanging out in person. The problem is, invariably, one or both of you are going to pull out your digital devices and you're going to do a thing, because that's how we've kind of conditioned ourselves over time. The whole intent behind this exercise that I'm describing, where you're talking on the phone, yes, there might be the pulling out of the device as you talk on the phone, but there's an expectation when you're on a live call with somebody else that you're going to have that person's undivided attention. And you can see if they're distracted on the phone. Phone, I think, is better as opposed to video, because then it doesn't matter to you that they're distracted. You won't even know, and you can focus on your message, and hopefully they will in return focus on you. I think when you're physically there, that's lost. It doesn't really work the same. This is my opinion, and I stick to it myself. So as I go through all my different reviews and I talk to different people and I try to explain kind of what I do and here's how this works and here's what I want to do, I'm always asked the question, and it's constant. I'm always asked the question, you know, what are you doing right now? I don't believe that matters. And the reason I don't believe it matters is because the people that I'm speaking to, it doesn't matter what I'm doing now. It matters what my potential is. What can I do in the future? And what will I do in the future? And how can I be of value to you? That goes to potential. It's nothing to do with what I do today. Today, I do a podcast. I actually do three of them. And in the podcast, I share information that's on my mind. And in some cases, I may have guests and I talk to the guests and we cover whatever topics. And you, the listener, get to listen in on our conversations. So you know that I do that, but does it matter why? Maybe. Does it matter what I do as my day job? Only if I decide to talk about it. Maybe it doesn't matter to you. Maybe you don't care. Maybe it's not a topic of interest. I can't assume that it is or isn't. So if I talk to some entity, some person who their question, and I've talked to at least six of them recently, and they all have the same question. Well, what are you doing right now? What have you been doing recently? That doesn't really, in their case, it doesn't really matter. Who cares? What I want is people that say, we want to understand how you can help us. We want to understand how you can benefit us. How can you drive value for us? And then I will explain it. Because the truth is, I'm more diverse, I think, than just a single definition. There's a lot that I can do. I don't fit into one category of person. I can be a project manager. I can be a business analyst. I can scrub toilets. I can do landscaping. I can do painting. I can do pretty much anything. It doesn't matter what I'm doing. I just want to make sure I'm paid what I want, that I'm taken care of. Whether I'm an employee directly of yours or I'm a contractor, it doesn't matter, because ultimately I want what I want. I can work from home. I'm not subject to any specific schedule. Nobody's trying to force a schedule upon me. I'm treated like an adult, and I control when and how, as long as I get the outcomes done. This is so unusual for everybody else. It's hard for these companies and people to wrap their head around how somebody can be the way I think, how they can be that way. How can you be where you don't want to be dictated to? The truth is, I'm an adult. And as an adult, I don't want to be treated like a child. Why should I want to be treated like a child? I don't think anybody should appreciate being treated like a child, but that's what we do. And I've just pushed back on it. That was one of the reasons I decided to start the podcast, was to document my journey so that others could listen and understand. This is how I am. And maybe people take something away from it and really think about it. Is your, whether you're a contractor, whether you're an employee, whether you're a teacher or a student, it doesn't matter. If there's some situation where you feel like you're being treated like a child, meaning you're not allowed to use your own brain to make your own decisions for your own reasons and your own situation, questioning and challenging whether that's really the way you want to be and whether that's acceptable to you, because sometimes you're okay with it, and great, I celebrate your desire to be okay with being led, but I suspect that there's more people out there that they don't want to be treated like children either, but they've never stopped, kind of slowed down, to go back to Dr. Aradia, kind of slow it down and really think about, do I really want this? Is this really what I want for me? And what do I need to do if it's not what I want, or to change it to something that fits better for me? However that fits for you, I'm not in position to tell you what works for you. I simply call out my experience that I, at one point, said, I no longer want to be treated like a child. That's the problem. So we start with the problem. What's the problem? The problem is I don't want to be treated like a child. If you think back to school, elementary school, it makes sense why they would treat you like a child, because you're a child. If you think up to now middle school, right, high school, they're still treating you like a child because you are a child. You have to show up in your class at a certain time. You have certain defined schedules of the class. You got certain assignments and tasks, and they want you to do them at certain times. It's a very rigid, assumptive thing, but you're a child. You have to have that rigidity in order to be complete. When you get in the workplace, what happens? They do the same thing that you did when you were in school, because they are still treating you like a child. And what I'm saying is that whether it's college, which, yes, it's a form of education, but you're no longer a child, or it's work, or it's contracting, or it's anything else where you're engaging, church, right? Anything else where you're engaging and you are working with someone else, I believe, in my opinion, that you should want to be treated like an adult, first and foremost. And what does that mean? That means if you know that you can manage your own time, and that's the key. If you can manage your own time, you're allowed to manage your own time. If you know that you can manage your own schedule, you know what time you need to wake up in the morning. And maybe you choose to wake up at different times because that's just the way you are. Whatever you choose to eat, wherever you choose to go after work, however long you choose to work on a project at any given time, whether you want to or are required to be in class versus study, self-study, whether or not you need to go to the library to study a topic versus not, whether or not you need to work with other people to get it done or not, whether or not you need to be in your dorm or not at certain times. This decision, there are people out there that need somebody else to help manage their time. And I applaud that right to have somebody else orchestrate that for you. But for the people that don't require that or don't want that, I don't think that that's the right answer. And I think we should have the choice for those to manage your own time and go forward. Where am I going with this? When I look at the situation with the pandemic and I look at how the employers responded, which I don't agree with hardly at all, and I look at what the current administration is doing with Russia, Ukraine, and the truck driver situation and everything else, all the fallout, all we're seeing is, and it took too long, I think, there's a pushback from society. We're seeing protests around the world. We're seeing this truck situation. We're seeing a lot of tension and turmoil and general dissatisfaction with government. At a high level, that's what we're dealing with. And a lot of that is coming from resistance to what we saw overall, which is that the governments, they took a heavy-handed approach to a situation that was a serious situation, but they took too heavy-handed an approach because they didn't really know what they were doing. And now, too late, we're trying to see this pushback. Employers, they're not willing to open up and change their ways. They're still treating people like children. They're still resisting remote work. They're still trying to fight the natural evolution of where we should be. Meanwhile, we're trying to inject a lot of disruptive changes to society to force behaviors. we're trying to force everybody to have an electric vehicle, right? Despite the fact we don't have the infrastructure to support it, as an excuse for us having sky-high gas prices, which we could have fixed, but because we don't want to fix it that way, we're using it as an opportunity to force this electric agenda rather than put the pipeline back in place that would bring prices down until we're ready for the electric transition. We're forcing it. This isn't to say that some of what's being proposed isn't good, rather that we're not doing it in a way that is embracing of the way society is now, so that it's a partnership. We are supporting society rather than basically being dictators. And we're not treating our citizens, the ones that are adults, as adults and letting them make their own decisions for their own reasons. Despite the fact that we have, and historically, we have state by state embraced freedom of choice with abortion. They have embraced freedom of choice with weapons. They have embraced freedom of choice of what hospital you go to, what school you send your kids to. So in certain situations, they'll allow this freedom of choice, but then other situations they don't. I think that's where we started to create a line. I refer to it as a caste-based system, C-A-S-T-E. The idea that certain people, we're going to classify you a certain way, and we're not going to treat you like the adults that you are, and we're going to dictate to you. I think what we're seeing now is a pushback. And I've always been on the line, the other side, that doesn't want someone to dictate to me. I want them to treat me like an adult because I'm an adult and allow me to make my own choices for my own reasons. And my reasons will be different than my neighbor who has X number of kids and has to make different decisions than the other neighbor who's taking care of elderly versus the gentleman across the street who is elderly. We all will have to make different decisions for our own reasons and our own purposes. And then we just need to be smart about it. And I think most are intelligent enough to make the right choice for their own situations. I don't ever want anyone, government, employer, educator, or otherwise, or police, don't care. I don't want anyone telling me what I need to do, how I need to do it, because I'm an adult. And I want to be treated and respected as an adult. And I talk to adults on a regular basis. I believe that adults are capable, if we empower them with the right information and we don't mislead them, of making the right decisions for their own situations, just like we used to do, instead of creating undue panic with fear-based science on things, which then causes pushback later because we feel that everything was too heavy-handed. And all of this comes from a desire to, we need to open back up as a society, but I also want us to have learned from what we did. We took an abrasive approach. We should open back up, but we should have supported remote work a long time ago. In my mind, we should require businesses to embrace remote work if that employer can say, this work doesn't require somebody being in an office to do it. Like, I'm not installing hardware. I'm not a chef, right? I'm not a janitor. This work is just heads down accounting. Doesn't require you to be in an office. And as long as they say this role does not require you to be in an office, they should be required to accept remote candidates, regardless of what state, they should be required to embrace it. That would help us open up a lot faster because now these people can stay socially distanced and we can let them choose if they want to be at home or they want to be in a satellite office or whatever. We leave it to the adults to make up their own choice and go from there. I think we'll get there, but I don't think that we're going the right direction with how we come back out of it, where we're always going to have this notion that somebody has to stick something in their arm in order to be welcome back in an office, but you're not allowed to work remotely. Or if you are, you're still allowed to stick something in your arm just to be able to work remotely, which doesn't make any sense. Again, if you are a person who, for your own reasons, has, as an adult, has made a choice, this is what I want to do to protect my food, to protect me and protect my family. I support it, and I think everybody would support that. If you're the kind of person who has comorbidities and you feel that that's the right answer, in fact, if you do have comorbidities, I would say it definitely is the right answer for what you need to preserve and keep safe. If you're the kind of person who is older and you're not sure, or even if you are sure, I think it would be recommended for you. Other than that, I want everybody to be able to make their own decisions. And I think we'll be a stronger society if we get back to that world of freedom of decisions and choice And some countries, of course, don't necessarily have those freedoms ingrained in society. But I do think that where they're possible, we should encourage it as much as possible so that we can get back faster, because we're not going to get back faster the more that we're, you know, passing out uncertainties and untruths. And just another point real quick, because this episode won't be too long. I am of the belief, firm belief, that we've damaged personal relationships, and not just because of the pandemic, but over time, we've damaged personal relationships because of things we hear, things we read, things we see, and technology has fed this to us, and there are strategic reasons why. There was a strategic purpose behind how things have been positioned to us. And it's caused us as a society to lose sight of what we need to do in order to maintain that level of consistent communication and spirit around other people. I'm not just talking about going out to dinner. I'm not just talking about going out on dates. I'm talking just staying in touch with people, as I said earlier, on the phone and maybe write a letter. You're doing things to purposely stay in touch with one another. And of course, that takes a two-way street. It assumes that everybody can come around, because sometimes you have somebody you want to talk to, but they're embedded in the text messages and don't really want to talk. And it gets harder to really appreciate this form of communication, and you drift apart. You might be connected to them, but you're not able to maintain that connection. My call to action again, try. See if you can get back to the phones and get back to talking to people, because I think that's the first path to healing and getting past what we're dealing, is get back to the quality of relationships and the quality of connections that we used to have. I'll check back with you next week.